You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here today for another edition of our show, joined by my friend and my co-host, Sven Longshanks. Sven, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, Matt. It's really cold here at the moment, but it's been a beautiful sunny day. I've been driving about looking at the beautiful British countryside, just feeling glad to be alive, lucky to be alive. I know we've got a good program in store for people today, but just as I was driving around, you know, I was thinking, look at this beautiful countryside that I'm in. And I got back and I saw this article by Eric Stryker talking about what's happening in Appalachia. There's all these fires are burning, there are white people that are being burned out of their homes, and there's nothing about this on the news, nothing about it on the news at all. And I read that the Traditionalist Worker Party were getting involved in this and they were going to help people out, so I thought maybe we could maybe you could tell me and the listeners what's going on over there and just exactly what's happening, because we know nothing about it. It hasn't been on the news over here.
Well, and that's exactly I think the biggest thing that just goes to show what the double standard is within this system, that, you know, white lives don't matter to the system. You know, anytime any other group faces any minor inconvenience, that's the first news story you're going to have. You're going to be having advocates parachuting in from around the country. You're going to have politicians banging their hands on the lecterns, talking about how things need to get fixed. And things are going to happen. You know, the system is going to work to be able to help those people in need. And if you just look about how the Jewish system runs, we have American firefighters right now in Israel. Of course, there are these huge blazes in Israel. A little bit of God's will being done, in my estimation. But these huge fires in Israel, America sent firefighters and firefighting equipment and money to defend poor little Israel. Of course, the billions of dollars every single year we send to them isn't enough. The military aid we send to them isn't enough. Now we need to be sending our firefighters there to put out their blazes. But here in the United States, in Appalachia, of course, the whitest part of the country, also the poorest part of the country, is having the worst fires we've had in over 100 years, which is believed to be arson, which is a very, you know, tragic thing to add on top of this, because casualties are starting to mount. Hundreds of homes have been destroyed, dozens of businesses, churches have been burned to the ground, and the economy of a region that was already struggling has just absolutely been destroyed right now. It's going to be a very long recovery process, but the mainstream media has barely covered it. The most coverage that I have seen has not been on the television or the radio. It's been on Twitter, when leftists have been mocking the fires and saying that, you know, it's a good thing that white people are burning and this area supported Trump. So that they're glad and they hope all of us die, and that a bunch of hicks burning to death or having their homes destroyed, businesses destroyed, that's a good thing. I've also seen people saying that having your churches burned down are good because they support, you know, traditional marriage and things like that. It's a very conservative area, not necessarily a white nationalist area, but a very conservative area. And the enemy is gloating, which just goes to show, like, how much they actually hate us. and they hate whiteness. And unlike our system, where we view our opposition due to their genocidal policies against us, I guarantee you, if one of these leftist cars broke down in East Tennessee, even if they had a Bernie Sanders sticker and a rainbow flag, it would be the people of Appalachia that would take the shirt off their back to be able to help them. That in terms of being just a very kind and warm people, that's one of the defining characteristics of the Southern people and the folks in Appalachia. So this just goes to show how much they hate white people. The media doesn't care about us. The politicians sure as heck don't care about us. So that's where we're going to be organizing help. Initially, we've been able to have a few of our members from Tennessee go down and help in the shelters. But what's happened right now is we have organized to be able to send more teams with organized supplies. But right now we're holding off. We were initially going down this weekend to volunteer, but after talking with some of the folks running shelters there on the ground, what's happened is the shelters and the supplies are full, because this has happened not from government grants, not from corporations, but from the huge outpouring of people, mostly from the region. Appalachians helping Appalachians, Southerners helping Southerners. It's been a beautiful outpouring of support. So a huge amount of supplies have been donated, and including, you know, I've donated to the American Red Cross to be able to get that support there. I encourage other people, you know, when disasters like this happen, that if we can't explicitly have a white nationalist charity organization yet, to donate to groups like the Red Cross. But what always happens with a disaster, and this is what we've talked with the people that are on the ground there, that the outpouring of support really comes that first week, and you max out on the amount of supplies you have to distribute to families, but then things dry up because other disasters happen, or you know, attention turns elsewhere for a million different reasons, and then these people are still trying to put their lives together. This is going to be a long-term, multi-month, multi-year process to be able to get these families taken care of, to be able to help those who have been displaced, to be able to help those who have lost family members in these fires. There is a lot of long-term work to be done. So what we're planning to do now is, after talking to folks on the ground, is to wait till next week, start doing collections. We're going to be putting up some things online to be able to start collecting resources. But to wait until this initial wave of support, which is amazing, you know, kind of dries up. And then this is going to be a long-term situation to be helping our people, where we need to be there on the ground. We need to be helping our people directly so that they know that nationalists are the ones who are fighting them. So this is going to be a long-term investment in the region. It's going to be a long-term project for us. And I think it's going to pay dividends in order to be able to help our people and be able to build a political power base in the region. So that's what we're working on right now. It's a very tragic situation that areas like Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, and other places in East Tennessee are facing absolutely horrific fires, and thousands have been displaced. But we're going to start investing and really building. And on top of this, we're now looking into filling out the paperwork to be able to actually create 501c3, which is a charitable organization, specifically because we've been talking not just with the TWP, but with different organizations. And right now there is not a white nationalist charity group here in the United States. So to file the paperwork to be able to do that, and especially we're going to have to be looking into all the case law when it comes to civil rights and stuff, but especially if we're working in areas like, you know, rural areas and places like Appalachia, they're overwhelmingly white. So even if we're forced by the law to give aid to everyone, then we're going to be focusing in regions where over 90% of the population is white. So, you know, and we'll explicitly be trying to help the white community. So a lot of exciting projects. I apologize for talking so much, but there's so much going on, you know, between the media ignoring us, the politicians ignoring us, Israel getting firefighters when Appalachia doesn't, the need for us to be able to create a charity, and our long-term plans in the region. So a lot going on right now.
Well, that's the good thing about the Daily Traditionalist. You know, we can get out this news to the listeners, news that they wouldn't hear about elsewhere because it's not being covered by the mainstream media when white people are having problems like this. I find it particularly shocking and disgusting that there are people mocking people that are burning to death, that are having their homes burned down on Twitter. I hope the people that are doing this are being reported for that. I mean, and that's disgusting to be, you know, laughing at people that are having their whole lives destroyed. I did see, I believe it's called Appalachians Lives Matter. It was a GoFundMe site that had been set up. Was that anything to do with you at all, Appalachian Lives Matter?
No, but I mean, that's kind of an amazing thing, the amount of outpouring of support. And we've been talking with organizations such as the Association for Appalachia, absolutely great men and women who are involved in that. And they, of course, are secessionists, also the League of the South, who, of course, many good friends in inside the League. So people are organizing, people are coming together, and they're realizing our movement must be for us and by us because the system actively hates us. We have to be able to build the infrastructure to be independent. And this means not just being there on the ground, but for future disasters, we need to be the first ones on the ground. We need to be there every time there's a flood or tornado to directly invest in these communities in ways that the Republicans, the Democrats, and the mainstream system doesn't. We're the ones who love our people. We're the ones that need to be there. And that's why I think there's really this big push now that TWP and myself are really happy to be a part of, to kind of push things forward, but to build an actual charity arm for the white nationalist community to be able to ensure that when our families are hurt, we can get volunteers, we can get supplies anywhere in the country to be able to help our people when they're in need. Because anywhere a white family is hurting, anywhere there's a white family in need, that is a place we need to be.
I find it pretty sickening that, you know, you've got the Muslims have got their own Islamic charities, homosexuals, they've got their own LGBTQ charities, the Jews have got their own charities, blacks have even got their own charities. They've all got their own organizations that advocate for their people, advocate for their communities, and they go out and do outreach work in their communities. And they get government grants for doing this. They get sent money from the government just to be spent on their own particular ethnic group. And yet when white people suggest that we need somebody to advocate for us, we need a charity for us, we get accused of being a racist. We get called all these names. At the moment, you've got National Action that are doing a lot of homeless outreach work in Britain. They're going out, they're handing out blankets, thermals, even dog food for the homeless people that have got dogs. They're doing a lot of this charity work at the moment. And all the coverage from the left has been attacking them for this and saying how disgusting it is that racists are picking on the homeless, you know, that as if they're bullying these homeless. When what they're actually doing is providing support for them. And a lot of the homeless people are people that have been to war, that have served in the military, and now they've just been left with no home when they actually come back from their active service. So these are patriotic people that are on the streets. So there's a lot of sympathy for white nationalist organizations that are doing this from the people that are actually on the streets themselves. But the response to it in the media is absolutely disgusting. And the response to this tragedy that's happening in Appalachia in the mainstream media has just been silence, absolute silence. You know, we haven't been told anything about this. And yet when I think of Hurricane Katrina or anything that happens in Haiti or any earthquake that happens in Pakistan or floods that happen in India, you know, we're told all about it. And there's a huge drive to provide aid for them, to help out these charities, and all the churches in Britain will have all these boxes saying fill these boxes up with tins so that we can send them off to India or send them off to Africa. And yet when this happens to white people, when there's a tragedy that happens to white people, nothing at all. We don't hear anything about it. We don't see adverts on the television, you know, with a charity drive saying everybody give to this charity and we can help out the white people who've lost their homes. Nothing whatsoever. What we get is people mocking and laughing and making jibes at the people that have had this tragedy happen to them on Twitter. You know, it's really sickening, Matt, and it's got to be time that we had a charity that spoke for us. I'd like to see National Action form an official charity, and obviously I'd like to see the Traditionalist Worker Party form a proper charity over there in America. I mean, this is something that Golden Dawn have been doing for a long time now, the Nordic Resistance Movement, they've got this outreach as well. And I think it's very important that we show people that we are the ones that care about white people. We care about our own people. I mean, it's such common sense when you think about it. If you don't know anything about nationalism and you hear that there's a group of people that are nationalists, I mean, what does that say? It says, well, they stand up for the nation. They stand up for you. They do what they do because they love the nation. I mean, how more obvious can it be? And yet, thanks to all the brainwashing through the television and the schools and the rest of it, we've got these idiot antifas that think that nationalists are evil, that we're the bad guys. And we're not the bad guys, you know. We love our neighbours, we love ourselves. We're the ones that are actually carrying out the commission from Christ, the great charity commission, which is to love your neighbour as yourself. And it's only nationalists that actually do this. We do love our neighbours. That's why we do what we do here on the Daily Traditionalist. That's why you're doing what you do there with the Traditionalist Worker Party, Matt, because you do love your neighbour as you love yourself. This fraud where you love God's enemies, as you love yourself, is ridiculous. It's this fraud of giving everything that you've got to Syria or Africa, or helping out the starving children in Africa. Charity begins at home. You have to look after your own people first. Because, and if everybody did that, if everybody looked after their own people first, we wouldn't have half the problems in the world that we have today. Because there would be people there to sort these problems out. I think that's what it boils down to, Matt. You know, charity begins at home, and love your neighbour. I see being a nationalist as my Christian duty. You know, that is your Christian duty, is to be a nationalist and to love your neighbour. That's, you know, what it really boils down to. I don't know if you want to go into this second subject that we're going to cover today, Matt, or do you want to add any more to what we've been talking about?
Yeah, no, I think you really hit the nail on the head, and I 100% agree with you, Sven. I mean, that's where the scriptures tell us that he who doesn't care for those of his own house is worse than a non-believer. And we really need to understand that as a nationalist. That's why, you know, I've gotten attacked before by people who are, you know, identify as nationalists, but are anti-Christian, something, of course, I've never understood. But they always say, you know, would you pick your dedication to Jesus over your people? And the problem is, with their line of argument, is you cannot separate your Christian duty to your people from your dedication to Christ. There is no way to separate that, because to be a Christian is to believe in the principles of loving my family, that as Christ lived and died selflessly, I too, as a Christian man, am called to live and die selflessly for my wife, and for my unborn child, and for my son, and for my neighbor, and for my kinsman. I am called to work. I am called to possibly even give my life without a second thought, so that they might be safe, that I might be able to protect the widow and the orphan and the downtrodden. I mean, the idea of justice and taking care of your own people is the definition of what it is to be Christ-like. I mean, Adolf Hitler talked about that in Mein Kampf and in his speeches, that it's as a Christian that he is doing this, that he is fighting the enemies of God, that he is fighting for his extended family, and that's fulfilling his commandments. That is what we are doing. So we need to understand that's where charity starts at home, just as you said. And this is going to be a process to be able to build this charitable arm. And I think it's going to be a very important thing, because in America, of course, charities have to publicly release all their finances, which I love. It's just like political parties, like a TWP, because it's that openness that everybody knows when they invest, that it's actually directly going to things. And if we can have a white nationalist charity, people could feel confident that the money they donated, the time they donated, wouldn't be going, to Africa, wouldn't be going to the, to other ethnic communities' homes. It would be going to help our people. So there would be an accountable and effective political base. And I think this could also promote movement unity, because if we could have all the different organizations together helping for, you know, it's not about subculture then. It's not about exactly what group you're part of. But if we can build a charitable arm of our movement, whenever there's a disaster, you know, we can look and see what white nationalist organizations are in that area, get them connected with one another, and get these boots on the ground to start helping people, getting the financial resources to be able to get water and blankets and diapers and things like that to these families in need when they've been hit by a disaster. I think this is really the next step forward. That's where we need to go. I was just talking to one of my comrades in the National Front in South Africa. Absolutely amazing people out there. And they're doing a very similar program with their people support program, where they're collecting and helping the folks in the squatter camps and who have been hurt in South Africa and abandoned by the system, and they're making huge ground there. Of course, they're pushing for their own ethno-state in South Africa, and it's this direct charity that shows the people that it's nationalists that are fighting for them. So it's our Christian duty to do it. I think it could bring our movement together, and it's really the next step of our cause. So very exciting stuff. But yeah, let's. I'll let you introduce it. I've been chit-chatting for a bit, so I'll let you introduce our second topic for the day, Sven.
Well, yeah, I was just looking through the Daily Stormer and thinking, well, you know, what can we cover today? And I saw that the top article was to do with Black Pigeon and pornography. And I just thought, this is an important subject, pornography, because a lot of people see it and they think that it's harmless. It's really not harmless. And the whole mainstream media narrative is that it demeans women. But far more than it demeaning women, it manipulates men. You know, it manipulates men and it disassociates them. Just think, when if you are aroused, you're disassociated. All you're concentrating is on that one thing. And if you've got soft pornography all around you, you're going to be constantly in a state of arousal and constantly disassociated from what you're thinking about. You're going to be influenced to make decisions that you wouldn't normally make if you weren't in a state of arousal. So that's just one side of it is that it's manipulating men. You've also got the fact that it gives people an unrealistic view of sex, so that young people, when they see that, they think that that's the way that they should behave in it. And if sex isn't as exciting as they see on the television screen, then there must be something wrong with them. You've also got the fact that it's wasting your life energy. You know, I mean, if you're sitting there watching pornography and you're masturbating, you're losing that essential part of your being that's so powerful it can create another human being. And you're just wasting that. You're just wasting that, flushing it down the loo with tissue or whatever. You're wasting a really important part of who you are. There's a spiritual side to this, which is why celibacy was so important in all the Aryan religions. And yet today we're just wasting this life energy. And when you're wasting that life energy, what is it that you're actually watching? Well, you're watching a stranger screw a prostitute. I mean, how seedy is that? That is what it boils down to. Strangers screwing prostitutes. And people want to watch that. I mean, it's quite disgusting when you think about it. And it teaches young girls to be sexualized. And to give away something which is probably the most valuable thing that they have, which is their virginity. It encourages them to give that up and to sleep around. Whereas if you look in the past, if you look at Aryan societies, virginity and chastity, this was so highly prized, you know, that they would never let a girl out of their sight unless she was snatched up and somebody married her or raped her or abducted her. You know, they would make sure that these girls were kept within their sight all the time, because that was so important, was that they remained a virgin until they got married. If they'd lost their virginity, that was it. I mean, the old law was they had to marry who it was that had raped them, because nobody else would want them after that, and the girl needed looking after. And if you look at today, we're taught that we should just be sleeping around. You know, it should be one man with one woman, and pornography just encourages people to think that that's nothing, that's just old-fashioned. Well, it's not old-fashioned, it's the way that the white man lived for thousands and thousands of years. And now we see this pornography encourages people to sleep around. And that's the effect that it has had. And the knock-on effect of that, with all this sleeping around, is, of course, all the divorces. When you have your divorces, that means that the children no longer have a stable home. They no longer have both parents there. So they grow up with a warped view of life, because they've only got one parent there. And usually what happens is that then repeats. They end up getting married and they end up getting divorced, and their children end up without having both of the parents there, without that solid foundation that is necessary to produce stable, healthy families. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, it was quite rare to actually have other children with divorced parents. And yet nowadays, you know, it's at least 50% that have got divorced parents. And I know people my age that are already divorced, that have got married, that have got divorced. And it's all interlinked together with this idea that sex isn't sacred anymore. It's just something that you do. It's just this pursuit of pleasure that people have. Pleasure is seen as the highest gain. Whereas, you know, there are far more longer lasting joys in life than a fleeting pleasure. And when you think about what it is that's giving people this fleeting pleasure, I mean, it's just seedy what they're watching. It's degrading. It's degrading the white man to watch this. And the Israelis even used pornography as a weapon when they went into the Lebanon in the Lebanese war. One of the first things they did when they took over the television station was start beaming pornography into everybody's homes, because they knew that that would disarm the men. the men would not be able to take their eyes off it. And once they were watching it, they would be disassociated from everything else that was going on. They would be confused. They'd be in a state of constant confusion. And I think in this pornified society that we live in today, where we have scantily clad women walking around, we have the pornification of all our pop music, it's leaving men in a state of disassociation. Matt, I think this is one of the reasons why our men don't rise up as nationalists, because they're in a constant stupor from all this pornification. And instead of realizing what it is that's causing this and cutting themselves off from the pornography and keeping themselves celibate unless they've got a girlfriend and settling down with one, instead of that, they just go out and try and pull as many women as they can. They believe this Jewish promotion of sleeping around, which is basically the homosexual lifestyle. The homosexual sleeps with as many men as he possibly can. Whereas the white man settles down with one woman and produces a family, the homosexual just sees that as a sex act, which is just there to give himself pleasure. It's very selfish. Again, this watching pornography and pleasuring oneself, it's an entirely selfish act. It wastes, you know, what is one of the greatest gifts that we have is our ability to recreate ourselves. And instead of using that to recreate ourselves with a wife and produce a family, it's just being wasted. Now, all that creative energy which can create a human being, and if it's conserved, it will help you to be creative, and it will help you to think, and it will make you healthier, and it will improve your life. Instead of that spiritual side to conserving that, people are just wasting it and exchanging that for a short-term pleasure, and then they have these confused lives, and they don't ever achieve anything. And if you look back at when we had the British Empire, when we went and colonized America, at this time, men were celibate unless they were married. And when they were married, the only time that they would have sex is if they were going to have children. So that would mean that, you know, they would only have sex a few times a year, if that. The rest of the time, they were celibate. It was only, I read one book, and it was suggested that nobody even knew about masturbation in Britain until the 19th century. And it was saying that this was imported from the East, and how damaging it was going to be to society. And of course, it has been damaging to society. You cannot compare the state of men today with the state of the men that colonized America, colonized Australia, colonized New Zealand, and built the British Empire. I mean, our men today have got nothing on those heroes of the past. And a lot of this, I believe, is because they've been debilitated through pornography, through masturbation, through sleeping around, through no longer seeing sex as sacred, which is what we used to see it as. We used to see it as a sacred thing. And it is sacred because it can produce another life. And this is why marriage was so important, because marriage meant the consummation of the marriage, which was the sex act between the man and the woman, which could produce a child. Which is why it's so disgusting today that they could say that sodomy is equal to this life-creating sex act between a man and a woman. It's obviously not equal. It's an inversion of that. It's a perversion of it. It's a satanic version of it, really. It's the worst possible thing you could do with the most holy part of your body that they're doing. And again, this back to pornography again. They're doing the most sickening, twisted things that they can, sleeping around, having no respect whatsoever for the most holy part of their body that is used to create another life. And a lot of this wasn't covered in this video, so I thought I would bring it up here, Matt. I know you're a married man. You see sex as sacred. You know, you've got one child, you know, already, and hopefully you're going to have plenty more. So I know that you see sex as sacred. But a lot of people, our listeners, may think that, you know, this is just a Christian thing. But this is the way that we've always been. And whenever any society stopped seeing sex as sacred, it fell apart. You know, just look at Rome, what happened to ancient Rome. And when the Saxon tribes and the Goths, these pagan Christian tribes, some of them had accepted Christianity. And when they came into Rome and they saw how decadent it was, they couldn't believe it. You know, these people were celibate and they had respect for marriage, and they shut down the brothels and they said that anybody, you know, there was no sex outside of marriage. They had to be married. And they saw that it was this decadence that Rome had introduced that caused it to fall. And this is what we have all around us now. We see our civilization falling. And a large part of it is because we no longer see the most important thing in life, which is sex, producing children. We no longer see it as sacred, Matt. I know I've got off on a bit of a rant there, but I don't know if you'd like to respond to that at all.
Yep, real quick as we close out. You know, it's such an important issue. And I would just say that... the Jews only give one thing away for free, and that's pornography. That should tell you the spiritual sickness that it causes. It's been said that pornography is the iconography of the devil, because it takes something so beautiful, which is sex between a husband and a wife, which leads to the creation of children, it keeps the marriage strong. It's such an important thing, and it twists it. Just like everything else the Jews do in the system, they twist what is good, they twist what is righteous, they twist what is beautiful, and make it ugly. So... just remember, in terms of your strength, especially as a single guy, you know, I understand how hard it is to struggle with this. Every man of our generation does. And if a man says he doesn't struggle with this, you know, growing up as a millennial with access to the internet, that is, Dr. Johnson says, when he's wearing his clerical hat, that the church fathers never could have imagined how easy sin and vice is in our modern society, because it's so bad. The Jews push it so much within our system. So I understand how hard it is. And that's where prayer, physical strength, going out, find a relationship. And I know it's hard in this current climate due to radical feminism, but you know, it's an important thing to struggle for. And remember, you are, when you fight this, you are fighting the Jew, because they want you to be addicted to pornography. I know it's a hard struggle, but it's something that, whether you're Christian or not, don't give the Jews that power over you. So it's a very important thing, and I'll close out on that note. So Sven, thank you so much for being here today. And comrades, we're going to be having, I believe, Matt Parrott and Tony Hovater here tomorrow. I'm going to be at work, but I will look forward to then seeing you guys next week. So thank you for listening in, and hail victory.
Be tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.